Welcome to the Deep Dive, a deeper look at sermons from Faithway Fellowship Baptist Church.
Today we're continuing our study on the great women of the Bible, and we're jumping right back into the teachings from Pastor Tim Travis.
We are, and we're focusing on Ruth, specifically the end of her story, chapters 3 and 4.
Which is really where the whole story turns. I mean, it's such a dramatic conclusion.
It really is. And if you remember where we left off, the book starts with just so much loss. I mean, deep, deep grief. Ruth's lost her husband, her father-in-law.
And they're back in Bethlehem with basically nothing. And, you know, Pastor Tim Travis made this fantastic point that tragedy, it doesn't always just end.
Right.
Sometimes the really hard part, the struggle for what to do next, it starts after the big life-changing event. They needed direction. They needed a plan.
They absolutely did. And that's what we're going to unpack today. We're looking at these two huge themes. First, this idea of unmerited favor in chapter 3.
And then the amazing payoff in chapter 4, what we're calling undeniable redemption. It's what takes their story from, well, tragedy to total triumph.
So let's start there with unmerited favor. It's basically grace, right?
It is. But it's so important to get the distinction that Pastor Tim Travis always makes between grace and mercy.
Okay. Because I think a lot of us, myself included, kind of use them to mean the same thing.
We all do. But think of it this way. Mercy is God not giving you something you do deserve.
Like punishment.
Exactly. Withholding the deserved negative consequence. Grace, on the other hand, is God giving you a wonderful thing you absolutely do not deserve.
So mercy is a pardon, but grace is a winning lottery ticket you didn't even buy.
That's a great way to put it. And Ruth is about to cash in a huge ticket of unmerited favor.
And it all starts with some advice, some wisdom from the elder, from Naomi.
Yes. In Ruth chapter 3, verse 1, Naomi says, "My daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee?" That word, rest. Mm. It's not just about taking a nap. It's about security, stability, a home, a future. Naomi is stepping up, and she's leaning on that wisdom the Bible talks about, you know, in Titus chapter 2, where the older women are to teach the younger.
But the plan she comes up with, I mean, let's be honest, to our modern ears, it sounds a little strange.
It sounds very strange. She tells Ruth, go wash up, put on your best clothes, go to the threshing floor where Boaz is working.
And then when he's asleep, go lie down at his feet. It sounds so risky.
Incredibly risky. And this is where that cultural deep dive is so vital. Pastor Tim Travis explained that this wasn't some weird or inappropriate physical act.
Okay.
The threshing floor was a public space, a busy outdoor work site. Her going there and doing this, it was a formal legal maneuver.
Like serving him papers.
That's exactly it. It was a very bold, very public, symbolic way of saying, you are my kinsman. You have a duty to me. It was unconventional, for sure, but it wasn't indecent.
And Ruth's response to this crazy-sounding plan says everything about her character. Verse 5, all that thou sayest unto me, I will do.
Just total humility, total obedience. And think about the contrast. Mm. Naomi came back so broken she wanted to be called Mara, which means bitterness.
Right.
But Ruth has this forward-looking faith. She decides God's plan, however radical it seems, is the only way forward.
Which brings us to that moment at midnight. Boaz wakes up, he's startled, and there's a woman at his feet.
And she makes her request, verse 9. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman.
That's such a powerful image. Spread thy skirt. What is she actually asking for?
She's asking for everything. Protection, blessing, honor. In the Old Testament, that image of a wing or a skirt being spread over someone is a symbol of covenant, of protection. She's asking him to be her redeemer.
And his answer is what's so amazing. He doesn't just agree. He tells her why he's agreeing.
Yes. This is all about her reputation. In verse 11, he says, all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman.
And we have to stop there for a second. She was a Moabitess.
A Moabitess. An outsider from a people that historically were enemies of Israel. She would have faced, I mean, just imagine the prejudice, the gossip in that small town.
So she had everything going against her, just based on where she came from.
Everything. But her character, her virtue, the way she cared for Naomi, it preceded her. It spoke louder than all the prejudice. And as Pastor Tim Travis said, when you're following God's will, he puts you where you're supposed to be.
And her reputation was so solid that Boaz knew no one in the city would question it.
Not for a second. He knew the elders would back him up.
Which is exactly what happens next. That reputation leads directly to chapter 4, to the undeniable redemption.
And Boaz does this by the book. He is a man of incredible integrity. He goes right to the city gate.
Which was their courthouse, their city hall, all of it.
Right. And he calls the guy who is actually first in line to be the kinsman redeemer plus 10 elders as legal witnesses. This had to be done publicly, righteously.
So what exactly were the rules for being a kinsman redeemer, the Delaware goal?
Well, there were a few key qualifications from the law in Deuteronomy. First, you had to be a relative. That's a given. Second, you had to be capable. You had to have the money, the funds, to buy back the family land.
Okay, so kinship and capability.
And third, you had to be willing to marry the widow to raise up an heir for the deceased. It was a whole package deal.
And that's the part Boaz presents. He offers the other kinsmen the land, but then he adds the twist.
The crucial stipulation. In verse 5, he says basically, the day you buy the field, you must also buy it of Ruth the Moabitess.
So you get the land, but you also get the wife.
And any son you have with her won't carry on your name or inherit your stuff. He inherits this land in the name of the dead man.
Wow. So you're basically paying money for an asset that will immediately leave your own family's balance sheet.
Exactly. It's a terrible financial investment from his perspective. And that's why he immediately says no. He says, I cannot redeem it lest I mar my own inheritance.
He chose his wallet over his duty.
He saw the land as an asset, but Ruth, a Moabitess widow, as a liability. He couldn't see past the short-term cost.
So he takes off his shoe, which was the custom to seal the deal.
And just like that, the rite of redemption passes to Boaz. And this whole scene at the gate, this legal transaction, is the gospel in the Old Testament.
The kinsman redeemer is a picture of Christ.
A perfect picture. Christ had to become our kin. He took on human flesh. And he was definitely capable of paying the price.
The price for our sin.
For our spiritual bankruptcy. It's right there in Colossians 1.14, in whom we have redemption through his blood, even the forgiveness of sins. Boaz took on the marred inheritance, Ruth. Christ took on us our sin, our liability.
Which gets to that point Pastor Tim Travis made, that Christ's finished work, it
right.
dissolves our work.
It does. And that can be a hard pill for people to swallow, you know. The idea that we don't do anything to earn it. It's Ephesians 2.8 and 9. We're saved by grace through faith. It's a gift, not of works.
So we don't contribute. We just receive.
We just receive the unmerited favor. And look what happens. The story goes from complete emptiness to total fruitfulness.
Their lives are turned completely around, from bitterness to blessing.
And not just for them. This fixes the entire lineage of the Messiah.
You jump to the end of chapter 4 to that genealogy, and the weight of it just hits you. Boaz and Ruth have Obed.
Obed begets Jesse.
And Jesse begets David, King David.
It's unbelievable. An outsider, a woman from Moab who faced all this prejudice, becomes an essential part of the royal line that leads directly to Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. It's proof that your past, your status, none of it is a barrier to God's plan.
That's such a powerful takeaway. Pastor Tim Travis's encouragement was to never, ever underestimate what God can do with a life that's just submitted, surrendered.
You might feel too old like Naomi or like a nobody, an outsider like Ruth. But God sees a king where everyone else just sees a shepherd boy in a field.
He sees an ancestor to the Messiah where the law just saw a financial problem. What an incredible journey from unmerited favor to undeniable redemption.
A beautiful story.
And before we go, just a reminder, you can catch all of the sermons from Pastor Tim Travis on YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. The best way to find everything is to just visit faithwayfbc.com.
And as you think about Ruth's story, this outsider who became so central to God's plan, just by showing virtue and following his will, consider this. If we focus on serving God with integrity, regardless of how others see us or what our status is, what incredible position, what amazing future might we be underestimating in our own lives? What is the destined place that God has for us?